station, your radio station, our radio station, 91.3 FM and 95.8 FM stereo.
Good evening. Your host, Yusuf Fisher, this side of the microphone, with you once again until 12 o'clock, inshallah. I invite you to join me on a caravan into the night. Assalamu alaikum rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Hartlike goeienaand. Weer eens van die gasheer en vriend Yusuf Fischer, die kan van die mikrofoon van nou af tot 12 uur vanavond, inshallah. Dit is maandagaand, een lieflike koue maandag. Ek hoop en vertrouw dat u warm is waar is en u nou saam met my die aand gaan deurbring met die karavaan en die aand. Monday evening, and of course in the company of your favorite community radio station, the Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM. And on the Mondays, of course, when we have firstly our night surgery program, and then, of course, hospital time. Night surgery this evening, yes, I won't have Professor Carla with me, but I do have an ear, nose, and throat specialist with us this evening. I'll introduce the lady after the ad break. That will take us until 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock we have the news, and then after the news, we will then have the hospital time when you can send your messages for those who are not well at home or in hospital till 11 o'clock, and then from 11 till 12 it will be open lines where we take dedications and any other kind of message, inshallah. However, for now we are in the night surgery slot, so do not send any messages, getwa messages or birthday messages. It's only for those people that would like to pose a question to our specialist. And as I said this evening, the specialist is an ear, note, and throat specialist, ENT specialist. So, Kanala, no other questions where other illness and ailments are concerned, because the speciality is the ear, the nose, and the throat, inshallah. So, you can send us the question via WhatsApp. And the WhatsApp number is 0829-913-913. 0829-913-913. Or you can call. The number is 021-442-3530. 021-442-3530. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after this. As I said, this evening we have an ear, nose, and throat specialist, and the lady is Dr. Vanila Makaye. Doctor, good evening.
Good evening to you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the program this evening to talk to us about the ear, nose, and the throat. Now, let me start off by asking you, what does the ear, nose, and throat specialist actually do?
Okay, hi. Thank you for having me in the program.
You're welcome.
And to the children as well. Broadly, ENT specialists are surgeons. I think that's mostly what sets us apart from your normal family doctor or general practitioner, because a lot of the conditions that we manage hand in hand with general practitioners, but the added advantage that we bring into the picture, obviously, is
right.
The option of surgery where indicated. So mostly ENT surgeons would manage problems with the ears, either with the ears are discharging, they have a chronic infection, or there's a problem with hearing loss. We also deal a lot with sinus problems, allergy problems as well, and now in the era of COVID, we've had quite a few patients that are having a problem with smell and taste, challenges after the infection, so that's also one of the things that we deal with. Also, throat cancers and voice problems. Mainly those are some of the things that ENT surgeons. Yeah.
Right, so what we are seeing is that ENT actually has a broad spectrum.
Yes, right. Definitely. And in fact, we also work a lot with pediatricians, because we manage quite a large number of the pediatric population with regards to tonsillectomies and managing them with like things like acutotitis media, where they may end up needing in the long term grommet insertion, and kids with snoring as well. So,
Right. Now, Doctor, we said that this evening we're first going to start off by touching on the topic chronic otitis media. Tell us, what is that? What is the chronic otitis media? What exactly are we talking about?
Okay, sure. It's just a bit of background as to why I actually decided on this particular topic. I trained in Durban. So the majority of the population there is fairly rural, and so access to healthcare is a challenge. So we generally used to see a lot of patients that present to us with very advanced ear disease and complications as a result of that. So I thought I would just touch on it this evening, just mainly to raise awareness, because it's quite a common problem. So chronic otitis media is basically simply defined as a chronic change in the structures of the ear, in the part of the ear that we call the middle ear. So that's basically beyond the eardrum. So it's that area inside there with chronic changes, chronic being defined as anything that has been long-standing for more than 3 months.
Right.
And so generally what you find is that these patients would come in with a discharging ear. Sometimes in the acute phase, there may be a bit of pain, but in your more long-term disease, there isn't generally pain. And some hearing loss, and sometimes there is a buzzing sound in the ear, which we refer to as tinnitus. And they may also report some imbalance. And,
Right. Now, one then need to ask the question, where does this originate from? You know, this infection, how do people actually get this infection?
Yes. Okay, that's a very good question. So there is a number of theories, which I'm not going to bore your listeners with, but to put it simply, it starts off more like fluid in the ear, and generally in children it's usually because of an upper respiratory tract infection, and the connection between the ear and the nose, which we call the eustachian tube, which actually helps to ventilate the ear and to make sure that there isn't any infection that is accumulating there, is not fully formed and it's not fully functional. So in most people, it starts then, but generally the part where you start getting a defect in the eardrum in terms of having a perforation, a hole there, or having what we call cholestotoma, which is keratin in the middle ear, those kind of processes take place in the much older and the adult population. Mm. And we find that most of the time the bacteria that infect the ear is actually the same as the bacteria that you would find infecting the upper respiratory tract when someone has a flu. So that's where those kind of theories have come from.
Right.
But there is also things like, if for instance you may have sustained some trauma to the ear and then you ended up with a hole in the drum, and that hole subsequently got infected, because obviously the function, one of the functions of the drum is to protect it from the outside, more contaminated sort of environment. So once that barrier is breached, then it's very easy to sort of get bacteria inside there, and then you start having infection.
Right.
So the other common causative factor for it, though not as common as obviously just your common bacterial infections, is that it may come as a complication of previous surgery. Remember, I did mention earlier that in children, when they have this persistent fluid in the middle ear, we may sometimes put in what is called grommets. And basically, putting in a grommet involves cutting a small hole in a part of the eardrum and putting in a tube to help the ear ventilate. That is supposed to be physiologically, with time, it's supposed to come out on its own, and then the eardrum is supposed to heal. But in some patients, that doesn't happen.
Right.
The tube falls off, but then the hole is persistent. And then with chronic infection, it just becomes bigger and bigger, and then it becomes a chronic problem. On the other hand, I mentioned briefly a more sort of complicated process is what is called cholestotoma. So what happens is that somehow the skin on the outside of the ear, which is totally different from what is on the inside, finds itself on the inside, and then because it produces what is called keratin, which is basically protective when it is in the right place, but once it has found its way to migrate into the ear, then it starts causing infection, it produces keratin there, and the ear starts discharging, and the keratin is quite a big problem to try and deal with, and it's basically one of the indications for ESH to try and get rid of that keratin that is now found itself in the wrong place.
Right. Doc, we need to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, also very interesting, when we talk about ear, nose, and throat, interesting to know that they are actually, they're working together. They intertwine. So we're going to take a break and we're going to talk about this after the break. Night surgery it is, and this evening I have with us ear, nose, and throat specialist. That's Dr. Wanile, that's Dr. Manile Makaye. There you go. And the doctor practices at Melomet Mitchell's Plain. Telephone number there is 021-110-5950. That's 021-110-5950 if you'd like to make an appointment to see the doctor. Now, Doc, as I said about the ear, the nose, and the throat actually being, can one call it almost attached? Just explain that to us.
Yeah, sure. It's actually quite impressive because in most of the problems that you end up with in the nose, you find that they end up affecting the ear most of the time. And also generally you find with patients with allergies, for instance, because the lining of the nose is exactly the same all the way down at the throat, going all the way down to the chest, you find that most children that have asthma, they end up with allergy problems, they end up with blocked nose and also itchy eyes and that kind of thing. So generally, the pathogens that affect one area, we generally refer to it as the upper respiratory tract and the lower respiratory tract. You find that most of the allergens that affect one area would affect the other area as well. I referred earlier to the Eustachian tube, for instance, which basically connects the back of the nose to the ear, and it is believed, I think most people become aware of the Eustachian tube when they change altitude, when you're flying and suddenly there's that fullness in the ear, and then when you pop, then it feels like now it's back to normal again, you know? So that's just one example that most people are aware of, that if your Eustachian tube gets blocked for some reason, then you can end up with either fluid in the ear or just that disturbance that feels like the ear is full, even though there isn't really physically any water inside. And the other thing that we see quite commonly as well is that in adults, when adults present with, for instance, in the community that is immunocompromised for any reason, it might be HIV associated or a history of diabetes or some form of cancer, when they have a growth in the back of the nose, because there's lymphoid tissue in the back of the nose, and in adults, generally supposed to regress, but in the presence of immunosuppressed state, that can, the lymphoid tissue in the back of the nose can grow back. So most of the time, because people think it's just a flu when your nose is blocked, but as soon as the ear is blocked and suddenly you can't hear, that's most of the time how those patients present. They come to the doctor with single-sided ear fullness and sometimes a bit of pain and the buzzing sound, and the doctor looks in the back of the nose and they find this big mess that the patient was not aware of.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation there, Doc. So what I want to do, I'm going to go to some of the questions that has been sent to the studio. The very first one reads, Assalamu alaikum, good evening, doctor. I'm a female, 69 years old, and weighs 65. I recently developed vertigo, and now it's tinnitus as well.
Yes.
So that's all I got.
Okay. So she mentioned that she weighs 65 kg.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a few things that I'm missing there, but I'll try to just give her broadly a response. So it would be important just to know, firstly, the duration of these symptoms and whether they were associated with any drastic changes, for instance, in her weight, or if it was preceded with some ear infection, or anything of that nature, because obviously drastic changes in weight, for instance, would lead to some sort of fixation tube dysfunction, which may end up giving her those kind of problems. But also with in that age group, vertigo may also result as a more systemic sort of problem. But if somebody has a problem with hypotension, for instance, getting up too quickly from a lying down position, they may become hypertensive and then they get a bit of dizziness. And it's important sometimes also to make a distinction, because vertigo is quite a broad term. So with regards to a more ENT-specific sort of vertigo, there's a specific definition to it, and how the patient characterizes it basically give us an idea as to where we put them. For instance, does it last a few minutes? Does it last a few seconds? Does it last the whole day? So that basically gives us an idea of where we can put them. So I would suggest that they go and see their family doctor, and then the family doctor will do an assessment. If there's anything obvious in the ear, then they can treat it. But if not, they can refer to an ENT, and then we'll be able to assess it further and see how we can help.
All right. The next one says, Doctor, good evening. Can you put breast milk in a baby's ear when they have earache?
Okay. So I thank you for that. I wouldn't really advise it. I know that it's what you call it, an old wife's tale. It's one of those home remedies that our mothers came up with, you know. So breast milk is quite sterile, actually. So, but I wouldn't advise that you use it in that manner, because normally what happens in children is that, I touched briefly on this earlier, is that they get what is called acute otitis media, which basically means that they accumulate some fluid in the ear, either associated with an upper respiratory tract infection, and also because specific to children, their eustachian tube is still forming, and the angle in which it lies makes them quite prone to getting infection from the nose transmitted to the ear, resulting in fluid there. So generally, if the child is crying, pulling on the ear, they have a temperature, then in that case, the family doctor may prescribe the cause of antibiotics. What happens is, even when that acute episode has been treated, the fluid in the ear can persist even up to 3 months. So the difference is that that fluid is I'll put it in that comment and say it's sterile, so it's not infective anymore. The child is not crying, they're not irritable, they're not pulling on the ear. But maybe you see a difference, because when there's a noise, they're not as responsive as they were before. So you can tell that there might be something going on with the hearing. But generally, we give it a bit of time, and usually the body clears it on its own within 2 to 3 months.
All right.
But obviously, if it persists and it's starting to affect the hearing, then the child may end up missing from it.
Okay.
But I wouldn't advise it.
All right. Okay, I've got quite a few more for you, Doctor. So the next one is, good evening. I have a very itchy and sticky ears. 69-year-old female, very careful not to scratch in ears. It's a very old problem. Please advise.
Okay, that is usually common in patients that have a dry skin problem. So patients that have eczema elsewhere in the body would generally have the same problem in their ears. So we normally advise that they, just to make sure that there's nothing more sinister going on, she can see her family doctor. But the main thing is to make sure that the ears are not, are neither too dry nor too wet. So she can just once a week from the pharmacy get something like olive oil ear drops, and just put them in the air just once a week to make sure that the air is not too dry, but it's not too wet either. And then she can use an antihistamine, a systemic antihistamine, to try and help with the itching. Because like I'm saying, that generally in patients who struggle with itching in the ears, it's more commonly because of a more systemic sort of eczema, dry skin problem, rather than something that is particular to the ear as such.
Okay. Good evening, doctor. I am a 40-year-old female, weighs about 90 kilograms. I had ear infections 2 weeks ago, got antibiotic. After a few days, I went back to the doctor, who gave me a stronger antibiotic. Then my breathing and I had a cough. Went for x-rays. Luckily, it wasn't pneumonia. Then it was my lungs collapsing. But since then, I can't smell and taste. And it's the third week already. Please advise.
Okay. Thank you. It's just a bit unfortunate that this patient doesn't mention whether at any point she was tested for COVID. Because obviously, it's one of those things that we need to be aware of with that kind of symptoms.
Right.
So generally with ear infection, we tend to start patients off with autotopical antibiotics, meaning ear drops that have an antibiotic in them, depending on how the patient presents. So if the patient presents with an ear that is actively discharging, then generally the treatment approach is to give them an antiseptic, which is usually acetic acid, an ear drop to dry off the pus. Teach the patient how to do oral toilets, to basically use cotton wool. We don't use cotton buds at all. So there is a way that a nurse or a family doctor can teach you how to make an earwig, and then you clean the ear and put in the eardrops. In about 3 days, the ear should be dry, and then after that you start using the antibiotic eardrops. So we tend to not use systemic antibiotics. By systemic, I mean antibiotics that you take through the mouth for just an uncomplicated infection in the ear. So once you have complications, though, that's a totally different story. Then your doctor may decide to give you the antibiotics that you're going to take through the mouth. But generally, we tend to start with topical antibiotics because they have been found to be a lot more sensitive to the bugs that generally grow in the ear, and also because you're applying the antibiotics directly to the source of the problem, it works a bit better, because most of the antibiotics that you take via the mouth may actually not even reach the ear in high enough concentrations to treat the problem.
Right.
So I think we may be dealing with two problems in this particular patient, because I don't think that the other coughing and the lung problems were really related to the ear, and I would have loved to have a bit more information with regards to what's going on with her lungs and the loss of smell and the loss of taste. And in fact, quickly, so the loss of smell generally is the cause of the loss of taste, because they were closely together. You need to be able to smell in order to taste. And with COVID, now we have found that in most patients, and a lot of things with COVID are still under study, but in most patients within a week of having healed from the virus, generally the smell comes back. But in those patients where it doesn't, it can take anything from 6 months up to a year for them to get their smell back. Some colleagues have developed a kit which we call an anosmia retraining kit. It basically contains different smells to try and train the nerve of smell to recognize smells again. But unfortunately, at this stage, there is no pill that you can take to try and make the process faster. So it's a matter of rehab almost. You start rehabilitating the nerve of smell to help it remember how to to recognize the difference in the health.
Now, doctor, just something you mentioned, that it can take up to 6 months, almost a year.
Yes.
So
yes.
Why I'm asking that again, so people that is recovered from COVID but still has yes. this, they shouldn't be concerned. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. So it's not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily mean that they have the infection all over again.
That's
however,
what I'm asking you.
I need to just qualify that, because it's a different sort of problem if the patient recovered fully and their smell and taste came back, but then they started experiencing the same symptoms again.
Right.
So in that case, it might be that they're getting they're reinfected with the virus
sure.
again,
sure.
so I would advise that they check.
Sure.
But in somebody who had COVID and they had a problem with their smell and taste, and they recovered fully with other symptoms, but the smell and taste was still a problem. Then in those patients, I would say that, because there is a concept now of long COVID. So in some patients, COVID like persists for months with regards to them not being able to breathe properly, them being tired all the time, and in some patients, the smell and taste is persistently gone for much longer than usual.
Okay. Thank you, Doc. Salam, good evening. I am a 58-year-old male. I often have post-nasal drip. What can I do to remedy this problem?
Okay. So a post-nasal drip, basically, it's almost like having a runny nose, but it's just dripping at the back, at the back of the nose. So in most patients, there are a few things. We obviously firstly need to try and establish why is the patient having this kind of problem. Is it related to a chronic runny sinusitis problem, which basically means that the main problem is with his sinuses. So we need to try and treat that to try and deal with the post-nasal drip. But basically, most patients, they tend to benefit quite a lot from just nasal douching. And nasal douching just means you rinse the nose with a balanced salt solution. They sell them over the counter in the big pharmaceutical stores. They come with a kit.
Okay.
Usually contains a 200 ml bottle that is marked and with some sachets inside of the balanced salt solution. So you mix that, and in patients where it's quite acute, the nose is blocked and they're sneezing a lot, you may even use it twice a day, in the morning and in the evening. But if it's just a problem with just the persistent post-nasal drip, the nose is not troubling you so much, then you can just use it in the evening. It comes with quite a nice pamphlet with all the instructions as to how to use it, and you can get it over the counter.
Right.
So you,
okay.
Yeah, so he can try that, and then obviously if failing that, then he's welcome to come through and just consult, and then we can have a look and make
all
sense.
Right. We're going to take another quick commercial break, Doc, and then when we come back, of course, still lots of questions for you.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
All right. Dr. Vanilia Makaya is our guest this evening, and as I said, the doctor is an ear, nose, and throat specialist that practices at Melomed Mitchell's Plain. Telephone number to make an appointment, 021-110-5956. I repeat, 021-110-5950. And that's to make an appointment to see the respected doctor. Good evening. I hope you're all well. Yes, thank you. Shukran bi'a. When I was younger, I had a grommet fitted into my ear. I am a 42-year-old woman. I have a constant earache. My throat is always sore, and my nose runs constantly. I have this every 3 to 4 months, keep on getting ear infection. When do I see the doctor? The doctor says it's a virtual infection because she don't see any other infection. When I touch my throat, the gland is swollen. Please advise.
Okay. This patient basically seems to be suffering from, in all likelihood, she might have an allergy problem, right? And because of it, it has affected her gestational function with the previous gomit incision in childhood and the constant intermittent earache and also the throat and the runny nose, and she most likely also has a postnatal drip. So I would advise that she sees her family doctor when she actually has these symptoms. Because what happens sometimes is patients get those intermittent symptoms and they consult when they're not actually symptomatic sometimes. And it makes it a bit difficult for the doctor to try and figure out what's going on, because most of the time in patients, especially when their symptoms are seasonal, you find that during some months of the year, they're completely fine. They have no symptoms at all. And then suddenly when the seasons change, then they start getting all of the symptoms. So my suggestion will be that she consults when she actually has the symptoms. And even though the grommet incision is quite an important part of the history to consider, but I think so many decades later, I don't think that it may be related to that. It's just that because of it, it may give us a clue to say that she may still have some sort of gestation tube dysfunction problem that we need to deal with.
All right. Somebody just wanting your number again. The number, unfortunately, this evening, I'm not in the studio, so I can't type it on WhatsApp back to you. So you need to jot it down. The number is 021-110-5950. I repeat, 021-110-5950. Good evening, doctor. I suffer from headaches for years now. I only get a chance from the doctor's point of view to now only 3 months ago to go for a brain scan. Scan came out negative, alhamdulillah, but I still get the pains in the right side of my head and also having pain in my right ear, also for months now, which affects the right side of my throat also, and now making think that the ear is the problem to the headaches. Please advise and help. What should I do, please? I really can't anymore. The pain is sometimes very severe. Comes from someone by the name of Zulfa.
Okay, thank you. So, a particular patient, I would like to just go back and see what the CT scan reported, because there are some conditions that specifically affect the nerves, and also when you have I don't want to use too much of the medical terms, but when you have a bit of a longish bone on the base of the skull, and that particular bone is constantly irritating the nerve, it can give you this type of presentation where the patient feels like they have this constant pain in the throat that shoots up to the ear, and then it gives them a headache. And there is also a concept of a referred pain. And most people relate to this when you make an example of when you have a toothache, and then you end up feeling like the ear is painful as well. But the primary problem is not actually the ear. The pain is coming from the tooth. So most of the time in these patients, it's the same concept that they end up feeling like the ear itself has a problem, but actually because of this long silo process, it's constantly irritating the nerve. And because that's the other very, very interesting thing about EMT is that the area that we work in is, has a lot of nerves in it. So you have 12 cranial nerves generally in the body, and most of them are concentrated in the head and neck area. So it's a small space, but it's very delicate, and there's a lot of things that are going on. So sometimes some of the pathology is not so obvious unless you do a specific test that specifically look for it. So in a problem like this, we would work very closely with a neurologist because they can then look into options with regard to how we can co-manage this patient. But it can be quite an intractable sort of thing as a result. Okay. Yeah, so I would perhaps suggest that the patient maybe goes back to their doctor and just request if they can maybe refer them to an ENT or maybe to a neurologist just to have a closer look into
it. All right. Good evening, Doctor. Salam Tayyip. Shukran. Thank you to you and the ENT doctor for the great program. You're welcome. My mom is 76 years old. She has been having issues with her ears for a number of years. She always has balance issues, always have a raining sound in her ear, always get headaches. She's had a number of serious falls because of the balance issues and dizziness. She always wants to stay in bed, but I'm worried and afraid that lying down flat might make things worse. Is lying down for prolonged periods making a vertigo worse? The government doctors just say there's nothing that can be done for vertigo, but what about the head pain that shoots up ahead? Could it be something more serious? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That is serious. There's quite a few things that I would have loved to know a bit more with regards to this particular problem. For instance, does she complain of any hearing loss, or have they noticed that she sometimes ask them to speak a bit louder? Because in this age group, there is what is called age-associated hearing loss.
Right.
And because that particular type of hearing loss specifically affects the nerve, it can, just on its own, end up giving the patient problems with their balance and also with that ringing sound in the ear. But the associated headache is a bit of a concern for me because it with that type of hearing loss, there shouldn't really be any pain in the ear and there shouldn't be any headache. So we definitely need to have a closer look at what's going on there. He unfortunately also didn't give us a background as to whether his mom has any other chronic illnesses,
right,
like diabetes or hypertension, because those are some of the other things that can compound the picture as well. And with uncontrolled diabetes, hypertension, for instance, the patient can end up with headaches and also problems with balance. So,
all right. Good evening, doctor. My grandson is 12 years old. Just want to know if there's a cure for him. He gets car sickness. He gets nauseous, so will he outgrow it if he gets older? The parents give him, or what can the parents give him before they go somewhere?
Okay. So this is quite common in this age group and into early adulthood. It's what you call motion sickness. It's got to do with just how the body balances itself with regards to where it is in space.
Right.
So in most instances, we can try what is called vestibular suppression to basically, because there's a few things that tell your body, that tell your brain where your body is in space. For instance, if you're going to turn quickly, your brain already knows, and so you don't fall when you turn quickly. But what helps it to anticipate that is actually a connection between the inner ear and the brain. And so there's other muscles in the spine as well that contribute to that balance. And also a certain part of the brain that is specifically deals with proprioception, right? That sense of where you are in space. So generally in these patients that have motion sickness, it is related to the pathway that is connected to the ear that does not connect and communicate with the brain fast enough to say, okay, we are moving, right? Mm. So the brain is still in one state, but then suddenly the body is moving. So that is confusing, and then it gives that sensation that they feel like vomiting. So we can try, but it needs to be prescribed by a doctor. And since he's 12, it needs to be prescribed by either a pediatrician or an ENT to monitor his response to it. But it is definitely something that's called a vestibular suppressant that we can try and see if it will make
all right. All right. Just somebody saying, yeah, they used to need to invite doctor to the studio, inshallah, very informative. Well, it is very informative. Unfortunately, we need to be very careful now with COVID and, of course, with the lockdown and the levels, etc. So we can't just move around as we want to. But I will speak to doctor, and maybe we can have doctor back with us again very soon. Salam, Taysuf, and doctor, good evening. Doctor, sorry, you were saying, doctor?
Yes, I was just appreciating the comment. Thanks.
There you go. But me get to return to the paper. Yeah, good evening, doctor. I had polyps in my ears. I had polyps in my nose growing to my brain. I had the operation 10 years ago. Does it grow back? I'm a 60-year-old female.
Okay, Yusuf. Thank you for that question. This is actually my passion. So in all of ENT, this is my niche where we call this like the rhinology anterior cell base.
Right.
So it would depend on a few things. If this particular listener had this surgery for the first time in their 60s, so that then makes it unlikely that it will come back if they had it for the first time in their 60s. But that being said, the polyps are generally associated sometimes with just the irritation inside the nose. It's basically almost the same concept as if you get a skin allergy and then suddenly you develop hives.
Right.
But that concept inside of the nose, because of the chronic irritation, you end up developing this polyps inside the nose.
Right.
So it generally depends on what the cause was. So in patients that have chronic sinus problems, who are asthmatic, who have aspirin sensitivity, most of the time, by the time they're 60 years old, they've had like 5-10 surgeries in the nose for the polyps.
Mm.
Because the lining of their nose is that sensitive and that prone to developing this growth in fat.
Right.
But like I said before, that if it was for the first time and it was for a benign sort of cause, meaning it's a non-cancerous cause, then unlikely that it will come back. But I'd need a bit more background as to the cause and the type of surgery that was done, because those are all the contributing factors as to whether it will come back or not.
Most
of the time, I would say at least 7 out of 10 times, polyps in the nose come back. Generally.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, on that note, Dr. Vanille McKay, it was wonderful having you, not in the studio, sorry, on the program with me, but unfortunately, time caught up with us. Let me first say to you, well done, because I have so many more questions here, which shows that the people, they were actually very happy with the way doctors handled their questions and so on, so well done to Doc.
Thank you.
With permission, I'm going to try and get Doc back very, very soon, even if it's possible, as soon as next week. But I'll see what we can do. I'll get in touch with Doc and we'll arrange that. But for now, let me just say that Dr. Vanille Makaye is ear, nose and throat specialist at Melomet Mitchell Splane Hospital. Telephone number to make an appointment is 021-110-5950. 021-110-5950. That's to make an appointment to see our respected ENT specialist, and that's, of course, Dr. Vanille Makaye. Doc, with that, it's time for me to greet all the very best, and thank you once again for
thank
being
for
with us this
me.
Evening. You are so welcome.
Thank you so much.
You are so welcome, and please keep safe till we speak again. Good evening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
The Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM stereo.